Back together again, you and I chatting it up Tuesday style, October 14th, 2025, right here on Connecticut Today. I wondered out loud if Democrats actually have a plan to reinvigorate their party's prospects during the remaining Trump White House years. Yankee Institute blogger Megan Portfolio dropped by to talk about the current lack of details surrounding a rumored housing bill that could see action in a special session. CBS News White House reporter Olivia Rinaldi dropped by to update us on the ongoing government shutdown. And Quinnipiac University Assistant Professor of Interactive Media and Design, Dr. John Powers, talked about Instagram's new changes aimed at protecting teens who use the social media app. So I have a serious question to begin this here part of the program. By the way, great to be back. Thank you for tuning in maybe yesterday morning as I handled the Melissa in the Morning program. And we are back here right now at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Let me begin with a serious question here. And I'm not trying to be cute in asking this. But I really have to begin with this whole thing, because in looking at the events of the past couple of days, past couple of weeks, I'm wondering, and this will be our question of the day, by the way, at facebook.com/voiceofct. Have Democrats in Connecticut, has the Connecticut Democratic Party and the National Democratic Party in and of itself, have they completely lost it? Have they completely lost touch with what is happening in the country right now? I never thought I would see a day, and I've been following politics. I started to follow politics seriously in my junior, senior year in college. So we'll put that about 40-something years ago. I never thought that I would see both the modern-day National Democratic Party and especially the Connecticut Democratic Party. And I know they still have majorities in Hartford. I get that. I understand that. But that's really out of habit and nothing legislatively they're doing. But in looking at what's happened over the past few days, they're out of it. They have no idea what's going on here. And it's sad. And the reason I say that is I was, going through some stuff today to open the show with and setting up the show and our guests and what we'll be, talking about all day today. And I see this in the Hearst publications. And again, God bless these people. If they want to go out and protest, they can. God bless them. It gives the police department, it gives the fire department, it gives the EMTs, first responders, the permitting processes, these cities and towns, it's good for revenue. And I'm always like that. And I don't mind people protesting. But again, Connecticut towns are planning, it says here, more No Kings protests against the Trump White House coming up this weekend. They must be working. I don't think we have a king. Is the once proud Democratic Party that freaking lost? They have no leader. They have no policy positions. They're getting hammered in yet another poll that we'll get to momentarily. And this one is so sad, it's laughable. Another day of nationwide protests against President Trump and his administration is set for this coming Saturday, October 18th. 40 towns in Connecticut are going to take part. Okay, whoop-de-freaking-do. Where are the legislative initiatives? Where is the critical analysis as to why the Trump the Trump bulldozer is just rolling right along now? Look, instead of holding No Kings protests, which are really unnecessary because we don't have a king, has anybody stopped to wonder why the guy won last November? I guess now I'm reading over the weekend, there was another post-mortem. My God, Who's spending money on this? I'll give you your poor postmortem. You had no cogent policy on the border. You had no cogent policy on the economy. Not that everything Trump is doing or will do or did do on the border of the economy is great, but my God, instead, we're going to have more protests here. They're all over the place. Even in our area, Bridgeport, 12:30 to 2 at the West End Park in Black Rock. Okay, and that's going to do what? In Cheshire, Danbury, Deep River, East Haddam, Canton, Brookfield, all over the freaking place. Greenwich, Guilford, Hartford, Kent, Killingly, up and down New Haven. All right, no kings. Hey, all right, no kings. And what does that do? And again, I am not against protesting. But after a while, you're spinning your wheels here, kids. How did this happen? Explain to me how the modern-day Democratic Party, which controls nothing in Washington, nothing. Now, we'll see what happens with the midterms coming up. But how did this happen? How did this happen? Please explain this to me. Even people who don't like the guy are admitting that you got to give him credit on this Middle East thing. Now, as we heard, it's not perfect, but, you know, and I'm watching Chris Murphy. Oh, my God, Chris Murphy. I have 90 seconds of his idiocy coming up later on. Instead of joining along with his compatriots there in the Democratic Party saying, hey, this is a good thing. Well, Netanyahu, this. You know what word never comes out of Chris Murphy's mouth? Hamas. Don't blame Hamas, Senator. You'll piss off your lefty supporters there. But please, somebody explain this to me. How did this happen? How did the party of JFK, of LBJ, of FDR, of Bill Clinton, of Barack Obama, how did this happen? I mean, I'm looking at new polling numbers over the weekend saying, my God, they can't be this bad, can they? And that stooge Schumer took the bait and said, no, we're not going to fund Congress until you do this with the tax subsidies for Obamacare. And now he's got himself backed up against a wall here. It is mind-boggling. Honest to God. How did it get this bad? Again, remember, Trump won twice. He ran a third time where he only got beat by an aggregate of 45,000 votes, and that's because they kept Biden locked up in a basement and every Democratic Secretary of State around the country okayed mail-in ballots. So theoretically, Trump would have won three times. But instead, the once great Democratic Party, all they can talk about is fascism, is Hitler, is no kings. Meantime, we get nothing from them on policy. Nothing. Nothing. How did we get, as the great David Byrne is back on tour singing, how did I get here? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. I have this new poll coming up on the government shutdown. This is going to make you laugh. How on earth did we get here? And I know there are going to be people saying, well, okay, you know, Trump's got his cult and this and the other. All right, maybe he does. But he won twice, and he would have won a third time. Where's the policy? You folks out there, my progressive friends, where's your policy? Where are your ideas? Where are the ideas to say, hey, we are better than the other side? And we're already getting answers on our Facebook page, facebook.com/voiceofct, to the question I wanted to start with today. Have national Democrats and Connecticut Democrats just become disconnected from the modern day moderate centrist voters they need? I mean, think about it. And it's good now that they're looking at people like Wes Moore, like Pete Buttigieg, like Andy Beshear, like Josh Shapiro, knowing they've got to win back the center. But man, I have new polling results coming in, and about 90 seconds worth of psychobabble, and that's the only way I can describe it, from Chris Murphy over the weekend. I saw this yesterday. You know, I wasn't on yesterday afternoon, but I went home and watched himself on the weekend. And boy, I got to tell you, I coming up after the news, I've got 90 seconds of Chris Murphy that perfectly encapsulates what has gone wrong with the modern-day Democratic Party. The modern-day, the once-great party of FDR, of LBJ, of Harry Truman, of all those guys, is now a smoldering, festering, oozing mess. And the answer is more No Kings protests in Connecticut this weekend. Can you be that stupid? Can you be that stupid? Like I say, the only good thing about those protests is that our dear friends, our police officers, the men and women of police, firefighters, EMTs, first responders, they'll get some nice weekend overtime. That's good. I always like that. I'm sure the cities and towns that issue these protest permits say, okay, but we got to have a couple of cops there. Okay, we got to have an ambulance there. You know, in case somebody doesn't feel well, we get it. But my God, I mean, you can bitch and moan and cry about Trump and Trump voters all you want. What happened to the other side? I mean, it wasn't that long ago Barack Obama was around. What happened? Explain to me. Tell me what happened. It hasn't been that long. It's only been 9 years since Mr. Obama. Explain that to me. Was the problem pushing Hillary in there instead of letting Biden run? Hmm? Henry's with us to start us off. Henry, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Molly, I only called because you told me to call.
Yes. What's going on? Explain what the...
You told me to call for the answer. Now,
yes.
Please, if you really want the answer.
Yes.
I keep going back to, and I tell people all the time, he did. He won twice.
Yeah.
80 million votes. Close,
yeah.
75 million votes.
But, Henry, what happened to the other side? What happened to the Democrats?
No. The thing is, there's more on that side there. And I don't use, like an ignorant person, you go to school, you're ignorant. The teacher goes over to the blackboard and he explains something.
Yeah.
And you're no longer ignorant about whatever the subject may be. A stupid person can never be taught.
Mm-hmm.
And we have 80 million of them.
Okay.
And that's what he, from his own mouth, that's your president. I didn't say it. I'm quoting him.
So you mean to tell me then? So you mean to tell
the planet?
So you mean to tell me?
Well, he said.
So you mean to tell me that people who agree with him, for example, on the border, Henry, which is all but shut down now, they're stupid because they agree with him on the border?
Everybody agreed with him on the border.
Oh, not Joe Biden. Not Joe. He let everybody
well, no,
give
no,
in.
But me, I did.
Well, good.
How could anybody want a million people to cross the border?
Well,
every
and
day?
Again, Henry, that's the problem. What did they not see? How could they not know that guys like you and me can agree on the border and that they were letting 250,000 people a month in? What was up with that?
That's all true, but I'm talking about the word stupid now.
Yeah, okay.
Didn't the how are we doing with Iceland or Greenland?
I don't know.
What did we buy?
I don't know. We didn't get
what
them
did we
yet.
Buy 6 months ago.
It's on the list, Henry.
And we changed the name of the Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah.
That was important.
Yeah.
How much did he mention about insurance companies?
Yeah.
About the price of bread?
How much
did he talk about that? Oh, and Canada's the 51st state,
yeah,
isn't it?
Okay.
These are stupid people that buy
okay.
into that.
Yeah.
And that's from his own mouth.
Okay.
That's from him.
And he won.
Yes, because there's 80 million of them. He knew that.
Yeah.
There's way more of them than there are of thinking people. And all you got to do is go to the DMV
and
count them.
Yeah, so, so
that's all you got to do if you don't believe me. Where have you been? Have you ever walk around
Yeah, I do walk around, except I don't walk around in a coma. That's my body. I don't walk around in a coma.
Do you hear the reasons why they vote for Trump? You hear their reasons?
Well, number one, well, no. The people I talk to
are prejudiced people. I hate to say it. Let me say it, and now you're going to hang up on me.
Okay. Well, I do. You know what, Henry? I am going to hang up on you. Take it easy. All right, amidst all that's going on in the world and here in Connecticut, Fairfield County, New Haven County, all over the state, there is still apparently somewhere out there. We're not sure. It's kind of like looking for E.T. Here's a question. Whoa. What do the housing bill and E.T. have in common? Well, you're still trying to look for them again. At least we saw E.T. Well, we saw both of them once. How's that? So apparently, Democrats in Hartford, led in the Senate by Martin Looney and Bob Duff, led in the House by Jason Rojas and Matt Ritter, they are literally, folks, I'm not kidding you, because our next guest will attest to this. They're working on a housing bill that nobody has seen. And they're working on this bill that could alter the value of your home. So the majority Democrats still, despite the veto from Governor Ned Lamont, thankfully a few months ago, they are determined to Bigfoot Hartford into your local zoning conditions. And that may directly affect the value of your home, which for a lot of people is the biggest chunk of equity they have unless they're a business owner. Megan Portfolio is writing about this, her latest installment, legislators push for a vote, but the public can't read the housing bill. Megan Portfolio joins us. Megan, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing well, sir. And yourself?
I'm good. I'm shocked, Megan, when nobody can find the housing bill. Little housing bill, where art thou? Do we know where this is? Do we know whether it exists?
I think it exists because we did see a picture of the first page of it on Majority Leader Rojas's Twitter a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
So there is a document floating around there, but we're not allowed to see it. However, there is one group that has seen or at least heard about changes in it. Yeah. And it's this organization called the Open Communities Alliance.
Oh, that sounds warm and fuzzy. Yeah, go ahead.
It's like a civil rights nonprofit in the state.
Yeah.
Apparently they were involved in drafting the original bill.
Yeah.
And apparently they're still involved because they had a Zoom call last week with a representative from Avon, Eleni Cavros de Gras, talking about the bill. And about some possible changes, it seems like the structure of the bill is pretty much the same. It's top-down approach to housing, meaning that Hartford would tell us, you know, what we have to build in our town. They kind of disguise it a little bit with some, like, marketing tricks and saying, well, no, it's the towns take the lead. You just have to plan. Okay, but they plan, however.
Megan?
And it's still top down.
Yeah, Megan, do me a favor.
Megan,
you got to start again because you broke up for about 10 seconds there. So rewind.
Oh, my goodness. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. It's not your fault. Rewind to the representative de Gras there. And apparently there have been, subtle changes here? You think it's rebranding, remarketing here?
Yeah, it seems like a lot of rebranding is going on. She had made a statement during the Zoom call.
Yeah.
That she had contacted the governor's office and asked about, you know, response to the bill. And the answer she got was, it isn't good. There is a lot of pushback, meaning the people in this state aren't big fans of this bill right now. But she's still adamant. She says she's been pushing for a special session since July. How irresponsible is that? Why are you calling for a special session when you don't even have a final draft that you can share with the public? Like, what kind of lawmaking is that?
Well, I see. Here's what I don't get. If you're Ned Lamont, and Ned Lamont is a very smart guy, look, we can tell he's got pretty good instincts. Megan, he's going into an election year. Why in hell would he sign that bill? Unless, are they trying to tell him, and correct me if you think I'm way off here, is somebody in his ear saying, well, if you veto this again, a lot of the progressive voters will stay home. This could cause you the election. Because if you're Ned Lamont and I'm heading into an election, I'm saying, get out of here with this. I have an election to win.
No, you might be onto something, but that's typical politics. You know, they wake up, these politicians wake up in the morning and look in the mirror and say, what can I do to get reelected? Like, that's literally their number one goal every day.
Yeah.
So you're not off base in thinking that. But it's insanity that they have this bill out there. Mm-hmm. None of us, they've changed the name of it. Now it's called an Act Concerning Housing Growth, which is not the same name that they had during session. And that was a bill that was concerning housing and the needs of the homeless people. So now you've already changed the bill. I don't know what else you're changing in it, but Kava Sagral is even saying, like, yeah, we don't like to release these bills, you know, too far in advance of the special session.
God forbid.
Like, what?
God forbid. Do they really think we're this stupid?
I don't want to speak for them. But clearly we're not this stupid, because we had so many people in the state reaching out to the governor's office to ask him to, you know, to veto the bill, and he did. But, you know, she's not going to stop. She has been pushing this legislation, you know, since the beginning of the session. And Republicans have called for them to say, hey, like, guys, let's just wait till February. There's nothing in this bill. If this bill were to pass today, not one thing will change in the cost of housing or the cost of rent. Nothing. So why the rush?
And again, Megan, I talk to people about it and I explain to them, Megan, so many people, and I'm not speaking for the people you talk to or whatever, but so many people, they think this is low-income housing. They think that there are these benevolent developers coming in on a great white steed, I'll build all this low-income housing. Too many people, Megan, don't understand that it would only be a percentage of what they're allowed to build and market and sell at market prices. So they're still going to make gobs of money.
And it's, you know, like you said, it's only a small portion of them that have to be affordable. And that's only like one part of this bill. This bill was, maybe 90 pages. It was so long ago. But it's a very long bill. And there's a lot of stuff in it. But we don't know what this stuff is. Like I said, they changed the title of it. What else have they changed in this bill? The director of this Open Communities Alliance or whatever they are.
Mm-hmm.
He came out and during the Zoom, he had said this isn't a state takeover of local zoning,
but
leaving it solely up to the towns has not worked. And we really need state action to take on this crisis. So,
we're in crisis mode now. This is suddenly a crisis. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And I'm not saying that we don't have an issue. Pricing is high. Pricing for rent is high. Pricing for homes are high.
Yes.
Putting a bill that isn't even drafted, according to Carlos de Gras. And calling a special session, it reminds me of my friend's brother, Matt, who would literally be rushing on the bus to do his homework because it was due first period. It was such a half-assed, sloppy job. I was like, no wonder you're not passing your classes. You're not putting the time in to come up with a complete product. You're just like throwing some stuff on the paper and turning it in, and you're going to get an F.
So finally, the way this is, and you know more about this than I do, so... Because this would be done in a special session, it doesn't require a public hearing or can there's a lot of end arounds here?
No, there won't be a public hearing on this. And if you hear the proponents of the bill, they'll say, well, we've had public hearings on this and we've had this and we've been hearing about this for years. Okay, but you're literally changing the bill. During that Zoom, they even threw out this idea of some fund that can be used by the municipalities to address, like, infrastructure. But what does this mean? Is this an off-budget account? Is this taxpayer-funded? Do the developers have to pay into this fund? Like, there's a lot of there's more questions than there are answers right now. And that's meaning we should not be having a special session until our questions are answered. And you present to the public a complete product that we can review.
Exactly. It's not the rocket science. Okay, check it out, folks. Legislators pushing for a vote, but the public still can't read the bill. Megan Portfolio and the Hartford Portfolio. Check it out at theyankeeinstitute.org. Megan, thanks. Take care and keep me updated, all right?
Have a great night.
Appreciate it. Megan Portfolio there. And yeah, if some people living in Stratford or anywhere in Fairfield or New Haven County or all over the state are federal employees, they may be out of a job permanently soon if this government shutdown is not settled. But both sides appear to be digging in, we think. Joining us right now, one of our go-to folks, live from D.C., CBS News, White House reporter Olivia Rinaldi. Olivia, never a dull moment, another busy day. How are you?
Hey, Paul, I'm good. How are you?
Not too bad. What's the latest, Olivia? Certainly sounds like, by what you folks have been saying and what I'm reading here, both sides digging in their heels here on this shutdown or what?
Yeah, Paul, there's absolutely zero conversation happening at the highest levels of government between Democratic leaders in Congress, Republican leaders in Congress, and this White House. Even though we know the White House is talking with their Republican counterparts on Capitol Hill, there's not many conversations happening between Leader Schumer and Leader Jeffries and Speaker Mike Johnson and Leader Thune. There's just those conversations that just are not happening at this moment. Both sides are really digging in their heels. Now, we do know that the rank and file are talking to each other. So we do know that some members of Congress, some of those senators, are having those types of conversations about what it would take for everyone to get back on the same level, same playing field, and talking to each other, trying to get this shutdown solved. But nothing really coming to fruition at this moment. The House also just isn't here. They're back in their home districts. And Speaker Johnson said he's not going to bring them back until the government reopens. Well, you kind of need them to vote so you can get the government to reopen. But he says, we already passed our 30-day extension package for the continuing resolution. We don't need to pass it again. Senate should take it up. They should pass it. And we should get back to work. He says that people are already working through their appropriations packages back at home. But again, some of that legislating you have to do in person. Mm. He did say, though, today, and I do want to underscore this in note, he says this could be the longest shutdown in government history.
Wow.
The last time we had a government shutdown back in 2019, it was the longest then. It was 35 days, and it was at a critical point where we had air traffic controllers literally driving Uber and delivering food so that they could pay for their credit card bills after working 6 days a week, 10-hour shifts. This is a critical point that we could be heading to, but it seems at this moment, none of those people were in the positions of power want to talk to each other.
Yeah, Olivia, one more quick question. What sense do you folks have down there? Is Mr. Trump, is the president completely driving this thing for the Republicans? Is it a his way or the highway thing, or is he actively listening to what the caucus is saying?
I wouldn't necessarily say it's on President Trump. It's actually Democrats that are the ones leading this shutdown, mainly because they say they want that fight over health care, over Medicare, and over those subsidies and those premiums that are certainly going to go up. They want that fight. This White House is saying that they, you know, would like to see the government open, but the Democrats are saying no way, no how, unless there is a conversation about extending those tax subsidies to lower healthcare premiums. So that's kind of where we're at right now. They're taking that staunch position. And so therefore, this White House may need to start playing ball.
Mm. Olivia Rinaldi, CBS News. Olivia, as always, thank you so much. We appreciate it. Have a great rest of your day. Thanks.
Thank you, you too.
Appreciate it. So there you go. Now, you know, if you've been listening to me for any time here or any other stations I've worked at, I use social media. In this business, you have to. So I'm watching constantly what's on X, which used to be Twitter, you know, what's on Facebook, what's on Instagram, what's on WeChat, whatever. I communicate with the audience about that. So does Melissa, so does Lisa, but we are concerned here about sometimes the deleterious effects that these social media channels have on young people. I mean, when I was growing up, you know, back in the 1850s, I'm kidding, I'm sorry, you know, you couldn't call somebody fat or, you know, use deleterious language that would, with a click of a mouse or a finger pop on a screen, be literally sent over the world, all over the world. If you said something and said something to somebody's face, you generally got a punch, a well-deserved punch. Doesn't happen that way now. And sadly, we have heard of young people committing suicide by being cyberbullied, and there's always been, you know, criticism of some of these companies not doing enough that they know they could do, because if they shield some young people from exposure to this, you know, they're not going to make as much advertising money. So now we hear that there could be a sizable or a significant move regarding Instagram. And joining us right now is a gentleman to talk about that. He has been with us on the program several times on issues like this. that pertain to cyberspace. Quinnipiac University Assistant Professor of Interactive Media and Design, Dr. John Powers, joins us. Hey, John, it's Paul here once again. Good to hear from you. How are you?
I'm doing great, Paul. Thanks for having me on.
Great, John. So what is happening here? Did I read this correctly as this might be the kind of equivalent of a movie rating here, like Instagram maybe going PG-13? Talk to us about this.
I mean, Instagram has, that is the way they are referring to this move they made today, where 13 to 17-year-olds will be, by default, put into a system that will basically make the content they view a PG-13 equivalent, if you will. So, you know, as you mentioned in your lead-up to this talk, they have been under a tremendous amount of pressure, Meta, Instagram, all the social media companies, but Instagram in particular. Their own research shows how, difficult and dangerous Instagram can be to young people and body image, anxiety, all sorts of things like that. So this is the kind of a move to appease people that they're doing something, and we'll see how it works out.
Yeah, John, this has kind of really been a battle because above and beyond everything else, right, all these social networks can say, well, we want to create communities. We want to unite the world. We want to share common interests. Well, that may be nice, John, but you and I know, and a lot of people realize, these are advertising companies. And they want, and there's nothing wrong with that, right? But if, I guess the more you shut down or shy away from an audience, possibly the less money you make. So we have the grand battle here again.
Well, absolutely. And we know how much 13 to 17-year-olds are attracted to social media and that community you talk about. But you know, the social media companies are in this vice, if you will, that yes, they need eyeballs on their screens and you know, active users on their platforms, and that's how they make money. And so they've designed technology to take advantage of our human weaknesses to stay on those platforms as long as possible. To make the money, as you said.
Yeah, Dr. John Powers, Assistant Professor of Interactive Media and Design from Quinnipiac University. So, John, how do they propose to make sure that they are excluding or at least protecting to somewhat 13 to 17-year-olds? How do they profit to know how old a user is?
Well, that's a great question. Of course, the user has to put a birth date and year in to join the platform. Obviously, people can fabricate with their birth date to get around that certain thing. Mm-hmm. But they're counting on that for step one. And step two is they are saying that they will use AI and other means to determine if someone is participating on the social platform as a 13 to 17-year-old and sort of make assumptions that way and, you know, potentially automatically put someone into this PG-13 experience if they feel that the birthday has been fabricated.
And even be above and beyond that, John, and the guest is Dr. John Powers from Quinnipiac. Boy, the algorithm or the working part of the master software in any of these social media outlets, Facebook, WeChat, Instagram, YouTube. I mean, it is even at night when I'm doing research for this show and I put in some innocuous search thing. And then for the next 3 days, I've got references to that on every channel I'm on, right? And I'm sitting there going, wow, you know?
This is exactly what we were talking about before, that the technology is designed in what we would call a less than humane way to, you know, addict may be a strong word, but that's exactly what is being done. Knowing that they have seen what you are searching for and said, oh, this is what Paul likes to hear, likes to read, likes to look at. So we're going to send him more and more and more of this. And, you know, if he clicks on this, they're building a database of a profile of you, and honestly know more about you than you know about yourself, simply to keep you engaged. We know about the infinite scroll.
Yeah.
That scroll never ends. And, how hard it is to put the phone down when, if it's YouTube, it's one video after another, or if it's Instagram, same thing. PG-13 experience they've put into place today is sort of coming after the effects of this technology has come to fruition.
Yeah.
On our young people.
And the scary thing, John, is that, as you and I well know, and you see it even with young folks and probably with your students at Quinnipiac, meaning all of society, we don't get that ability to discern and just wave our hands, enough with this, until we get generally older. And I think you have younger people from 13, probably all the way to some of your students, who have life experiences that, shall we say, might be a little more easily influenced by this stuff before people are old enough to say, all right, this is garbage. I've had enough. You're trying to hook me, and I've had enough. So the whole age of this thing, even down to those early teens, John, it's really insidious, isn't it?
Absolutely. And a lot of it comes down to, of course, young people are vulnerable in this, but I would contend that young adults, middle-aged people, older mm-hmm. people are very, very vulnerable. We see misinformation and disinformation being shared. And so the social media literacy, the ability for people to, to understand what's happening to them as they're enjoying the platforms that are here to stay. And they do connect us in ways
yeah.
that we weren't able to enjoy before. But to just understand and validate what's being said and sort of the impact this has on our mental health and how can we put, healthy boundaries around that is important, certainly for young people. And this is what Instagram's trying to do today. But I would say also for all of us.
Finally, John, I assume that you would urge parents or grandparents, if they have tutelage over a 13 to 17-year-old, to maybe follow up on this and see if they can actively participate?
Oh, absolutely. And parents, with this change, parents have the opportunity to go in, and adjust the filter. So it is set by default to PG-13 for the 13 to 17-year-olds. But if they decide they want it to be even more strict, their parents can go in and do that. Or if they want to expand the opportunities for their kids to see different things, they would have that chance too. So the parents, are involved. But as we've talked about before, this filter is no substitute for, open communication between parents and their kids and, talking about online behaviors and all that sort of thing.
Dr. John Powers, Quinnipiac University Assistant Professor of Interactive Media and Design. John, thanks. Good to chat with you. We'll chat down the road. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. There you go.